Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Join us every Saturday for a deep discussion about the biggest stories of the week. Go behind the scenes with journalists, political figures, and newsmakers to get a unique look at our city. And also, I want to hear from you, the listener. So please send any questions, critiques, or sponsorship inquiries to my email at hsanders@wweek.com. Thank you so much and enjoy this episode of the Dive Podcast. Welcome back to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Great to have you with us today for episode 43 of the Dive, brought to you by Willamette Week on this October 23rd of 2021. We have a great show for you today. We are joined by journalist Karina Brown, who is here to answer our questions about her article in Willamette Week's cover story. So she's got the cover story. She wrote a cover story about a sting operation into Portland's underground sex working and prostitution market. And we're also joined by a sex worker, somebody based in New Zealand, where it is decriminalized. We will be talking to her, asking her input. Her name is Brianna Beebe. Very glad to have her on the show. It makes for a really awesome interview where we get to talk to these people and ask them their opinions after studying and working on this topic. So I want to get you that story. But before, we have a duty to bring you all the headlines, everything that happened this week. This is the 90 Second News Flash. Folks, we are nearing the final stages on that investigation into that Portland police leak where media was informed about a wrongful accusation against Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. On Wednesday, the Portland Police Review Board supposedly came to a decision as to what to do about this matter, basically resolving this decision. But we won't be able to figure out exactly what decision they came to until a couple weeks after, so in an episode or two, we will present to you exactly what happened. I feel bad teasing this, where it's like, we don't have the facts right now, but I think it's just a story that they have come to a conclusion. We just can't tell you what the conclusion is just yet. So we'll keep you posted. Maybe in an episode or two, we'll get you that information. So on to the next story. This week, 91 people got laid off by the city of Portland for refusing to get vaccinated as the vaccine mandate went into effect. Of course, this is being vaccinated against COVID-19. So 91 people lost their job because they weren't willing to get vaccinated and show proof of vaccination. Some people thought that Shashila Jayapal would be running for Multnomah County chair. That's not going to happen. She's just going to be running for re-election on her seat. So, you know, whether or not you care about that race, I don't know, but people thought that she was going to be running for Multnomah County chair. She's just going to be looking for her seat again. State Senator Betsy Johnson, on the other hand, is not running again for state senator. She's running for governor of Oregon, and she's running as an independent. If that race interests you, and again, I've said many times, we will keep you updated. We will get you interviews with these people, hopefully. So speaking of that race for governor, Speaker of the House Tina Kotek is running for governor, and this week, Willamette Week published a really in-depth Q&A with her. So kind of an interview, a profile, a little bit of both, so give that a read. On to sports now. The Blazers played their first game of the season. They played it at home. It was just a few days ago, and they lost to the Sacramento Kings. So tough loss, but we got another 81 games, I think. Is that right? Okay. We want to leave you with some of the best places to eat. Our team spends a lot of time working on the best places in Portland to eat. There's a ton of them, but here's a few that made the list for this week. Try Brasajea for Spanish food. I hope I'm getting that pronunciation right. Try Soup, S-O-O-P. They don't actually serve soup. Or maybe they do, but it's mostly Korean food. It's not just a soup place. Anyways, let's finish it off with a Berliner from Phil's. That's F-I-L-L-S. So a real trip around the world. We've got a little bit of Germany, a little bit of Spain, a little bit of Korea. So enjoy. This has been the 90 Second News Flash. Let's go now to our main story. It's story time now, so sit back, relax, and just let me talk to you about this. In April of 2021, a man was arrested for responding to an online ad from a sex worker in Portland. Instead of meeting the person he saw in the ad, he was actually met by five police officers who arrested him and charged him with commercial sex solicitation. That man happened to be Dave Hunt, who was, according to this article, a bright star in Democratic politics. He was the former Speaker of the House and someone many thought would be governor one day. Well, journalist Karina Brown dove deep into this story to tell readers about the sex work market in Portland. She spent 6 months on this article. She interviewed multiple sex workers, elected officials, police officers, and many other sources. She posed questions like, how should we be treating sex work in Portland? How do police see it? How do the employees see it? It's a fascinating article. I really recommend you go read it. But if you didn't get a chance to read it, or maybe you did and you're like me and you have a ton of questions, well, here's your chance to have some of these questions answered. We are joined by Karina Brown, who wrote the article, and one of the sex workers that she talked to named Bianca Beebe. Now, Bianca works out of New Zealand, where sex work is decriminalized. I had so many questions for both. Here's a snippet of our discussion. Take a listen. Okay, Karina, let's start with this. So you wrote this article, and I just want to start with laying the groundwork. What are the rules around sex work in Oregon and Portland?
Well, prostitution is illegal. In practice, police, at least in Portland, my reporting didn't go into how the laws are enforced in other areas of the state. But in Portland, the focus is on arresting buyers of sex, not sellers of sex. So the police run stings. They run stings for both buyers and sellers, but for sellers, they try to offer services and tend to see the sellers as being there in a forced position, which is not the reality that sellers talk about their lives in. And then for the buyers of sex, police run stings with advertisements that don't hint at anything forced or underage. And then people respond to those ads and they get arrested without any contact, with the person that they thought they were buying services from. And then for the most part, so they get arrested for commercial sexual solicitation, which is a misdemeanor and can result in jail time. But for the most part, those people plead guilty and attend what the district attorney calls a John School. Which is a full 8 hours of training in the theory that basically all sex work is forced.
Do you think that, people say that in the police force, you're more likely to get speeding tickets towards the end of the month because they need to hit a certain quota of a number of speeding tickets. Do you think that there's any issues with the money of people who are getting caught going back into the places where they're getting caught?
Well, defense attorneys told me they were very surprised to hear that the district attorney was getting money from cases where their clients were pleading guilty.
Bianca, in this article that Karina wrote, people say that exactly what Karina just said, which is that police are cracking down on this because they believe that a large majority, or at least a good size of the sex work business, is going through people who are forced or coerced into providing this practice. As somebody in the sex working industry, does this appear to be the case? Is this your experience?
Well, I don't want to speak to what the police really believe. That is, to be determined by themselves. I am a sex worker, and I'm also an academic who specializes in sex work policy. So there is a substantial amount of academic rigor and lived experience from sex workers in almost every country in the world that indicates that prostitution stings and the prosecution of clients generally do not in any way decrease the amount of trafficking that occurs. They make labor conditions for sex workers worse, and they reduce our agency. So I don't think that police are asking the right questions, right? And I think the question, are people being forced into something or are they doing this consensually, sets up this really toxic dynamic in which you have, this question of the empowered sex worker, who's a girl boss and is just rolling in money, or you have the oppressed trafficking victim. And in all honesty, it's just a very misleading dynamic. Under capitalism, work is exploitative. Everyone needs a lot of money to pay rent, afford food, go to school, get their healthcare. So I'm not trying to allege that there isn't exploitation in the world. I'm not trying to say that it's not a problem. I'm trying to say that what the police are doing makes the problem of exploitation worse.
So people who defend sex work say something along the lines of what Oregon State Rep. Daisy Graber said in this quote. And I'm going to read this quote off here. Quote, when we have people dying in the streets, when we have unmitigated gun violence and a murder epidemic, I'm disturbed to hear that's where resources are being focused when it's a consensual act. Talking about the resources that are being focused on sting operations like the ones you discussed in your article. I wanted to ask your opinion on this because, you know, as a layman on the outside who doesn't know the finances or doesn't know the inner workings of the police force, like you guys have gone through and discussed in your article, it seems to me like, oh, well, we don't have enough resources, so we should be focusing on murders instead of sex crimes. Seems like a weak argument. How do you view that thing? Because I'm like, you know, well, that we should just increase the police force budget if we can't take, you know, we shouldn't let some problem slide just because the budget is not big enough.
Well, the fact is some problems are sliding and resources are limited. And no matter how many resources there are, none of them should be going to something that makes problems worse.
Yeah, expand on that. Yeah. So how are these stinger operations making the problems worse?
I can speak to that from the perspective of an actual worker. I'm very curious about this argument that when sex workers make less money and have fewer clients, our lives are better off. In what situation are workers in a more empowered and safe position when they have less money and less choice over how to engage in their labor? Like, name one industry in which that is true, right? So the very principle of what's called the end demand model or the Nordic model, in which you supposedly just criminalize the clients, even if that were how it worked in effect, in which only the clients are criminalized, that hurts all of us. We're making less money and clients are more reticent to share safety information. So for instance, a lot of sex workers will require real world information so that they can run a background check on a client before they meet with him. If you're worried about getting arrested in a sting, you're much less likely to do that. And reducing the demand of sex work makes it a buyer's market. It means that there's fewer clients, so there's more competition, which drives down prices. That means that sex workers have to see more clients in more risky situations in order to make the same amount of money.
Bianca, play a game with me here. You're the governor. What is something that you would change on day one, sex work specific? What's a law that you think has to go?
I would decriminalize sex work.
Okay. Can you elaborate on what that would look like?
Yes, for sure. So I'm a US citizen born and raised in the States, but I currently live in New Zealand, which decriminalized sex work in 2003, right? So I'm speaking from a place of like lived experience here where I am a sex worker who works under a decriminalized model. So the big thing that a lot of people don't understand is the difference between decriminalization and legalization. Partial legalization is what we see in some counties in Nevada. And the problem with legalization is it puts a huge amount of power in the hands of managers, right? Under legalization, you have to register as a sex worker. You have to submit to mandatory regular STI tests that are the results of which are available to your employer, and they are a condition of your employment. And you are only allowed to work in a registered brothel, right? That means that the majority of sex work that happens in Nevada is still illegal. And the people who are most vulnerable are not working legally. They're not protected. Under decriminalization, it basically means that sex work is not under, doesn't fall under criminal penalties. So the way it works here in New Zealand, I'm an independent sex worker. I can work out of my home. I can rent a place. I can work with a colleague if I so choose. I can advertise on websites where this is legally sanctioned. And most importantly, with decriminalization, I can really explicitly negotiate what I'm willing to do with clients and what the expectations are for them.
I just want to add to what Bianca said in answer to the last question, which is that here in Portland, as far as the harm that these stings cause, the story goes into detail about the arrest of a particular person, Dave Hunt, who was a regular client for a sex worker that I talked to in the story. And I just wanted to say for podcast listeners that sex worker who we're calling Jesse Sutton in the story talks about how his Hunt's arrest harmed them and took away actually a very safe and reliable and regular client and forced them to, or just made it so that they had to look for new clients.
So I want to talk about that because you wrote in the article how the sex worker that worked with Dave Hunt described him as like the ideal customer, right? He was respectful. He paid the right amount. He left on time, all the above. And we've seen the same thing happen with weed. Obviously with weed is legalized. That's not what you're talking about with decriminalization, but with weed being legalized, most transactions, perfect, right? Like going to the grocery store, you go in, you get your weed, you pay the amount. But we've also seen that there has been a lot of violence around weed stores, people getting armed robberies, people getting killed. Even Willamette Week has covered this topic. And even last week, there's still a black market for marijuana, as we talked about in the last episode. Are you at all, or either of you at all, worried that if there is decriminalization or a reduction of police stings, that this would encourage more of this kind of sex work? And thus, there would be more customers who are great customers, who are David Hunt style customers, but there would also be an influx of customers who aren't as respectful and don't handle the situation properly.
I mean, first off, I take offense at the idea that an increase in sex work is inherently a problem. Sex work is not inherently good or bad. The amount that people do it is not inherently good or bad. We need to think about sex work within the context of labor, right? It is a form of labor. And we need to strategize ways to eliminate labor exploitation within an industry. So am I worried that more people will engage in sex work under decriminalization? No, I'm not. Mostly because I don't think that more people engaging in sex work is necessarily a bad thing. I think people having more options under the exploitative system of capitalism is a good thing. I would say that New Zealand decriminalized in 2003, and this was one of the concerns that people had, that if we decriminalize, there's going to be this huge explosion in sex work, and you know, every 18-year-old is immediately going to start turning tricks from her dorm room and all this sort of stuff. So we had a massive review in 2009 in which people who actually opposed decriminalization served on the review board, and it was concluded that there wasn't really a substantial change in the number of sex workers in the industry in general. It had no increase in the levels of trafficking. However, people, sex workers polled did say that they felt more empowered in their negotiations with clients and ability to report violence if they so chose to managers.
Well, folks, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast. Join us next week, won't you? Please do. Till then, stay safe, have fun, keep reading. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. Take care. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganiban, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.